Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us. Above us only sky. Imagine all the people living for today.
Welcome. I'm Anne Wilson, and as always, I'm delighted to welcome you to Emerge Australia's 2025 podcast series, where I have the pleasure to speak with a range of individuals, patients, clinicians, and researchers impacted by and associated with ME/CFS and long COVID. I acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands on which we meet and pay my respects to elders, past, present, those emerging and listening to this podcast. This year, we are once again listening to Bloom, Emerge Australia's ambassador, singing her beautiful rendition of John Lennon's Imagine. The lyrics and music are just timeless, and I love them, and they take us to a place where we dare to imagine a world where there is no greed or hunger, no war, where we have a brotherhood of man, maybe a world without discrimination or stigma, a world where there is a cure for ME and where the voices of those suffering invisibly are listened to, seen and heard, where we imagine all the people. So today I'm once again speaking to Sarah Visor, a Brisbane-based author, speaker, and certified executive coach. Just to recap for you, in her early 40s, Sarah made the difficult decision to step away from a promising 20-year corporate career after experiencing severe burnout. What she didn't know was that her condition was a direct result of not being able to manage the early warning signs of stress. This led to full-blown ME/CFS, a life-altering condition she still navigates today. Through her personal journey, she's embraced a life that values balance, self-awareness, and resilience. Sarah inspires others by sharing actionable insights and practical strategies for managing fatigue. Her book, titled Too Tired to Think, is an intersection of hope and reality for those who battle long-term fatigue and their carers. Sarah has lived through it all, from being mostly housebound and feeling let down by her body, to now functioning well despite daily fatigue. Welcome back, Sarah, and I'm really looking forward to discussing this next series of discussions with you, where we will cover specific chapters of your book. Today, we start at the beginning and focusing on Chapter 1, A Framework for Recovery, a four-stage framework that we're really keen to hear about from you. So lovely to speak with you again today, Sarah, and welcome back.
Thank you, Anne. Lovely to be here. Yeah, and I've really, really enjoyed being able to give some insights from my own experience and all the other experience of people that have been able to pick up along the way. Now, today, our whole session, as I said, we will be looking at a framework that I developed. So what happened was when I was writing the book, I wanted to describe the journey of what to expect for people. I guess there's no one typical journey that people go on when they're navigating a long-term fatigue condition like ME/CFS or long COVID. It's going to depend on things like, I guess, how long you experience the condition for, the range and the severity of the symptoms that you have, how quickly or how not quickly you can get a diagnosis, and then the level of support that you have around you. And so all of these factors combine mean that people go on these widely variable journeys with their conditions. And so capturing exactly what is the journey that people would go on was a bit of a challenge. So what I've done was I was able to look at a model that has a little bit of flexibility. So people and you as a listener can hopefully be able to fit your own experiences into what I'm describing, even if it's not describing exactly what is happening for you, you can start to fit yourself in to some of these different stages. Now, I called the model the marathon of improvement and recovery. And I think anyone who's been living with a long-term fatigue condition, or anyone even who's around them, would understand why I've called it the marathon.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure our listeners relate to that very well.
Well, it feels like a marathon event that you have to take on. You have to have all this patience and all this stamina at a time where you just don't have the energy to do so. But if you wanted to visualize for me, what does this marathon look like? Imagine plotting it on a graph. Imagine plotting your improvement over time. And there are four stages that we're going to go through today. So the first stage is your starting stage. And that's when you're just getting a hold of the symptoms that you're going through and just getting an understanding that something is wrong here. Something is going on for you. So from the starting stage, then you will move into what I've called the messy middle. Now, the messy middle, it's called messy because it is this period of time, and it can go for years, where you've got these peaks and troughs, these ups and downs, the light and shade of experience. And gradually, hopefully, this is what we focus on sometimes, is the next stage of the messy middle, moving into what I've called onwards and upwards. And this is where you can start to see some little consistent improvements that happen over time. And again, this is like we're talking sometimes months, sometimes we're talking years. It can be a bit of a journey. And then the fourth stage is something I've called your new normal. And this is a stage for some people, they might feel that they've reached a level of recovery that they would call recovery. But for others, and I would put myself in this category, a new normal is a new state of play. It's something I've been developing along the first three stages. It's a new way of being. It's a new set of rules around my lifestyle. I haven't recovered to the point that I was before I had ME/CFS, but I've found a way forward and I've built a life around the fatigue that still remains.
Okay, so if we go back to the beginning and we look at that very initial sentence, the beginning of the marathon, something's wrong. Getting your head around what's wrong. No one's giving you any answers. No one's giving you a diagnosis. What does that feel like?
Well, yeah, just getting off these starting blocks sometimes can be a real challenge here.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's look, if for long COVID or for a post-viral fatigue, it might be a little bit easier because you can go, well, I had long COVID. You
Well,
know,
there was a beginning,
there was a beginning.
For those people, for example, who have had COVID, long COVID is a direct result of having had COVID and having the disease linger on. Okay, simple. You've got a cause and effect. For people with ME/CFS, it's really murky. You have got a very large percentage of people who develop a reactivated Epstein-Barr virus syndrome because they've had Epstein-Barr virus at some stage in their lives, and now somehow something, we don't know necessarily what, some people do and some people don't, has triggered their immune system to respond the way that it is. So there would be a number of people who go, why is this happening to me? What is it? Am I going crazy? And then they go to
Absolutely.
the doctor and they get like no sensible answers. And, of course, you might be imagining all of this, which is the nth degree of gaslighting. So how do you deal with that? Where do you start in your framework?
Yeah. And that's why I've put this starting point. And again, every stage in this framework is of variable length and abilities. But for me, it started with this period of unrelenting stress. So you wouldn't normally think you're talking about viruses here, but for me, it was more stress. And you wouldn't think that would be something that would lead to ME/CFS. And that wasn't the answer that I got from my GP or anyone else at the beginning. I feel like I was actually quite fortunate because it probably was around 6 months that it took for me to actually get the diagnosis, the words. And 6 months might sound like a long time, and it felt like a long time at the beginning, but I know of other people, they just, like you said, do not have those answers. And they go to the doctor, and it's attributed to all these other reasons. Initially, it was attributed to anxiety and depression for myself, but I changed. I went to an integrative doctor who was able to be a little bit more specific. But what we find is, like I found, being a conscientious and, ambitious type of person, as I was going through that first 6 month process, that start of trying to find this diagnosis, I was trying to meet all the demands of life, and I just didn't have the energy or the headspace for it. So I was cutting away at life until all it left was work. And then come home and sleep and just try and get through to the next day. And then eventually I had to give away my work because it just wasn't enough energy left for that. I think that's one of the things that happens for people is, you're left in this limbo, not really understanding what is it that's happening to me, what can I commit to? And this level of function can go down and down and down with time. What the other thing that I, when I think back to it, was the reality of what was happening to me wasn't really visible to anyone else around me. Particularly when I was stopped work, I was focusing on health. I was taking a number of different supplements that I'd been prescribed. So, my eyes were bright and my skin was clear. I looked in the mirror and I looked this picture of health, but I was so terribly affected. I just couldn't hold a sentence. I felt this bone-crushing exhaustion all the time. And it was just this really hard period to get through. And that gift that I got 6 months in were at least the words you have, and she used the words chronic fatigue syndrome, which we know is ME/CFS. At least I was given that as something to focus on. But what I then found at that time was, okay, I know what is happening to me now, but there is no set treatment plan for that. Like, it was really hard to find what I was going to do next. And that's what's led into the messy middle.
I think that yeah, when you go to the doctor and you're feeling unwell, or this used to be in the days where you actually went into a doctor's clinic, you're feeling unwell, you're feverish, you've got a cough, they would what normally take your blood pressure, listen to your chest, look in your ears and your throat and say, yeah, you've got pneumonia, and you're going to be feeling crap for a while, and I've got to give you some antibiotics. I want you to go home and take it easy for 2 weeks. Right? But when a doctor says to you, you've got ME/CFS, or if they just say chronic fatigue syndrome, which is worse, and they say, can't really do anything for you. You kind of walk out of that surgery going, I've got something, but now what do I do? And as you say, you would be in total limbo and you would go home. This is what I would do, and I haven't had that diagnosis. But I would go home going, well, what the hell am I going to do now? You know, that was helpful, not, you know. And I think if it was me, apart from the fact that if it happened to me today, forget about what I know and the job that I do, I'd be Googling furiously, what do I do? What do I do? But then I might be too exhausted to do that, in which case I'd sit and cry, or I'd just get angry.
Yeah, rightly so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you all of that's true, right? Like there's this range of emotions that you go through. But when you talk about sitting there and Googling, honestly, I didn't have the energy for it.
Yeah, no, if you've got to have the energy to do that, I've got the energy now, but if I was given that diagnosis, I
Yeah.
don't know if I'd have the energy, you know?
Well, she did prescribe a. I remember the doctor did prescribe a book, and it's mitochondria, not hypochondria.
Oh, yeah.
And that book talked about energy, holes in your energy bucket, and that concept made a little bit of sense to me, at least. I just flipped through that book, I remember. But yeah, it's a really isolating, very lonely time. When if you like break a bone, or if you've got something else that's quite tangible, you've got a treatment plan there.
Yeah, you've
But
got something.
yeah, it's something. The one thing that I think, and I hear a lot of other people have this experience, was I was on a lot of different supplements at that time, and I think there was like 15 at some point. But what I found was they didn't necessarily help at all. I don't know now whether my level of function is the way it is right now because of all the supplements that I took at that time. I don't know. I can't, there's no cause and effect there exactly. But that's the one thing that doctors tend to be able to hold on to, is give you all these different supplements, but then you diligently do what the doctors tell you to do. And if you're not recovering, then it's almost like, what's wrong with me? Yeah, it's probably the biggest part of that difficult time was really understanding what was going on.
I think that I would feel the same way. And I would feel the same way. I'd feel as though I was losing my mind. Now I'm going to say something that's going to sound a bit odd. But when I turned 50, I started noticing that I had what I would call brain fog. In that I couldn't remember what I was going to say from 1 second to the next. You know, I'd be talking to you like I am now, and all of a sudden I'd stop because I had no idea what I was talking about, couldn't remember the next word, and didn't know, I had no idea what I was going to say next. And I kind of think, and that lasted for a good 3 years of my life. And I really thought I was going mad. You know, I thought something is dreadfully wrong here. I actually didn't do anything about it. I just kept powering my way through until one day I woke up and it was gone. Now, thankfully, that happened for me. But the thought that for people with ME/CFS doesn't happen like that, and that brain fog and not being able to think clearly stays, along with all the other physical symptoms, which obviously I didn't have because I didn't have ME/CFS. I mean, I just think that would plummet me into total despair and frustration. That no one could tell me what was wrong with me or what I could do to make myself better.
Well, what you're like, yeah, I can like brain fog, you'd have a good understanding of what people with ME/CFS probably feel like. Definitely been in those stages. The stage two of the journey that I've put in here is what I call this messy middle. And if we're plotting it on a graph, plotting your improvement over time, this is the holding pattern that we're in. But it's never just one linear line across.
That's
It's these little peaks and troughs, like in, you know, on a daily, on a weekly basis, you're kind of going up and down, up and down, up and down. And I think that's one thing that we're not prepared for. It's one thing that, you know, the GP or the specialist that I spoke to didn't tell me about was you're going to be in this holding pattern for quite a while. And for me, I would say I was in this messy middle period for at least 4 years, which is
Yeah,
a long time. It's the
yeah.
marathon.
And I underlined that sentence in your book, that it's not linear. And I think again that it's people with ME/CFS will go, yeah, well, we know all of this, you know. But it is important, especially for people right at the beginning of their journey, to not have expectations that if they go on a particular drug or if they organize their lives in a particular way, that it'll be instant. You know, we have lived for many years now in an instant world. You know, we have instant coffee, we take drugs to make us feel instantly better. You know, we expect that when we go to a doctor and are given something, that within a week we'll be back to normal. So it's about ensuring that people's expectations of their journey are not unrealistic. And I think that all of us, because we want to get better so quickly, because we just want to get our old lives back, might expect that that journey is more linear than very, very fluctuating. But as you say, when you're plotting it on a graph, if you were to put a line through that, those peaks and troughs, you will see a very, very, very slow, gradual improvement. But that at any time could dip. You go into a relapse, and that's the difficulty.
It's hard. It is that messy middle time when you're doing all the things that you're meant to be doing, when you're resting as much as you can, when you've probably stripped away at life to the point that you're down to the bare minimum. And if you're not seeing the response from that, it can just be, I would say that anybody would go through this period of grief, of frustration, of sadness, of anger. I know I went through all the emotions that it was possible. And you're going through all these emotions at a time when you're just exhausted anyway. So it's really, really hard time. What I found was you talked about the brain fog side, but there was any number of different symptoms. We know with long COVID, there's at least 200 different symptoms that people have. I went through the biggest ones for me was this exhaustion. It was trying to sleep. I was sleeping at night, but waking up feeling unrefreshed. It was the what we call PEM, post-exertional malaise, which is the after effects of activity. There was the brain fog was terrible, and I'd valued my whole life until then on the my ability to think. I loved, you know, the challenge. I loved reading was one of my biggest hobbies. Studying, just being a valued part of society in the workforce. And it felt like that was taken away. There was a lot of grief that came with all these things being taken away that it felt for me. And that was one of the hardest things was probably getting my mind around this is the new reality. And that we're going to get to the end where I say, look, here is my new normal. but I'm probably developing my new normal at every stage along the way. And I would say it was around 2 years into that 4 years that I was sitting in that messy middle, not really getting any better, having some good days, some not so great days, sometimes a little bit of improvement and then just back down again. It was probably about 2 years in that I really had to grieve and let go of this thought that I was ever going to go back to the work or the life that I'd had previously. And what I found was, that I was never going to go back to the corporate world in the same way again. But what it did was it opened up a new way of thinking and a new way forward. But I had to first go through that grief. And for the listeners here, I guess you're going to have a range of different symptoms. You might be looking back now and going, oh, that was my messy middle, or you might be in it right now. And it's, it can, this can be years. It's not something that you can put a time frame around. It's not something that you can micromanage or performance manage, like you were saying, Anne. It's something that you just have to, I guess, go with the flow. And for me, it was finding the ways of thinking. Eventually, I was able to get to the point where the ways of thinking that were a little bit easier rather than all of those intense emotions, the anger, the sadness. And I still felt them at times, but trying to find a different way forward that wasn't going to be wearing on my energy.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to get too much into the grief and the emotional side of things because we're going to cover that chapter further down in your book. Sarah's book has many chapters in it, but it's got, four or five distinct areas, and we're going to work through those in our podcasts, and certainly navigating the emotional reality and riding the emotional roller coaster is going to be the topic of our next podcast. So please stay tuned. But I guess that what I'm hearing you say is that you've been able to recognize that it might not be functional for you to continue thinking in a particular way about the stage that you're in. And whilst, as I said before, I don't particularly want to get into the grief and loss stuff, I think that recognition is something that is key. Maybe the way that I'm responding to this, even though it's horrible and terrible, and I hate the world, and no one can help me, and I can't get onto NDIS, and I can't get a DSP, and there's no one out there that understands, that there might be a different way of thinking about it to help yourself, not for anyone else's benefit, but to help yourself being able to live another day. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, and look, again, I'll re-emphasize that it's not that way of thinking. It's not every day. Sometimes I have bad days still. And my partner Demian sometimes has to bring me back down to earth if I'm having one of these bad days. But yeah, it's that really is where I got to was this new stage, and I've called it my new normal. And it did come after a long time. But it was what we find, especially in this messy middle period, it's like you've said it so well, and that we can put a lot of pressure on ourselves to kind of get back. Let's go back. I've got to get back to work. I've got to reconnect with all my friends. I've got to get back to the life that I used to be able to do. I used to be able to run 5Ks. I need to get back to that. And for me, what the new normal was just releasing those types of expectations that I was going to get back to something. And it took me 20 years of building a career, and I was felt like I was really in a good stage of my career. So it didn't come without a lot of this grief that we're going to talk about in future podcasts. But I had to, for my own sanity, release that expectation that I was going to go back to something. And I think, when I've listened to a lot of people's journeys, people who have been on, with maybe life-changing accidents or illnesses that they've gone through, people with cancer, common message that people often say is that they wouldn't necessarily go back to the life that they had, that they've created a new life, they've found some new perspective that's come out of it. And, as horrible as it's been, they can start to see the benefits or some of the gifts that have come out of that as an experience.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not an instant of getting there and saying, okay, it's, if you'd have told me I would use that word gift in those first few years, I probably would have slapped you. It's not an easy way of thinking. But what I found was, as I was navigating this messy middle period, I had to release some of those expectations on myself. Now, one thing that you said in there, and one thing that I really wanted to highlight for people, is this can be really devastating on the support and the relationships that you have around you. Because we're often talking here, if you're just sitting in a holding pattern for years, then, and it can be very hard for you to understand the experience that you're going on, let alone try and explain it to somebody else. And what I found was people will forgive you for a little bit, right? They will, like your workplaces or your friends and family, they'll be like, oh, yeah, okay, you're going through a period of time when you're not able to engage. But you start putting years on top of that, it can strain even the tightest of relationships. So there's a variety of scenarios. You might find that you do have supportive people around you, but then the long-term nature means that it can become like this grueling journey, and it can be straining on relationships. That's when we hear about relationships breaking down, whether that be a significant person in your life or whether it be friends or families. We hear about separations, divorces, or it might not be that simple and you just feel like you're living in these hostile, unsupportive environments. And I found that people did support me to the best of their ability, but as the years go on, it can just be really difficult to find that type of support that you need. If you live alone, and I did live alone at the beginning, it can be really lonely, and you really have this urge and this need to connect with people, but you just don't have the energy at the time to be able to do that. Now, I look back now and I can see that, it's not all bad in terms of support. There was, I had a little puppy at the time, and I think he was my savior because it was at least I had some company. And the routine of actually just walking him, and I was, some people can be bedbound, and this is really like terrible. I would never be able to do that. But I was mostly housebound at the beginning, but I was able to save my energy each day to be able to take him for this short walk. And it got me out of the house. It got me into a little bit of company. I feel like it was like a little bit of a savior. So you never quite know where this support's going to come from, I guess, at the beginning. But in this messy middle period, it's time. It can just be so hard, like just trying to keep your way of thinking positive and supportive, and can totally understand where people go when they go down into these depths that they get to.
And I'm very conscious of the time. What if the messy middle never ends?
Yeah, a lot of people have that. And that's, look, I don't have the exact answer for that. From my experience, what I found was I was eventually over time, I was trending very, very slowly, but trending upwards. But this is, I guess, in some ways where this whole concept of a new normal comes in. Is what is the new normal going to be for people? I'll just go through this stage three because there is people that can get to that point. So on your graph, if there's a line starting to trend upwards a little bit, it's showing improvements over time. And the progress that we have is never a straight line. It's more of these constant ups and downs that we have. But you might start to notice that your line is trending upwards, as you say. And it's that consistency that's important. Because if one of the hardest things around a messy middle is it can be that you just don't have consistency in your day. So how can you work? How can you commit to social occasions? How can you commit to anything? For me, I found once my energy started to become a little bit more consistent, that was a turning point that changed everything. And I wanted to go through a couple of improvements that I did notice because improvements can be so small. I think when we say improvement, we want to be careful not to think that you're going to make a huge jump in improvement. It might be that you're able to work on a task for 10 minutes at a time. And then this might turn into 15 minutes, say. It might be that you feel less tired after doing something mentally exertion, like maybe reading a book or working on a computer. It may be, for me, I started getting bored with resting rather than absolutely 100%, like feeling that exhaustion. I was able to concentrate on having conversations and focusing on people around me. You might find that there's less pain or discomfort in your muscles, on your joints. There can be improved stability of your mood, so less crying, less feeling. You might feel a little bit more positive about things. But the biggest thing for me was sleep. So sleep at night, what was happening in my messy middle time was I was just waking up unrefreshed every night, every morning. Once I started waking up feeling a little bit more refreshed, what that gave me was the ability to go, all right, I'm going to work in the mornings. And I just worked, just doing little bits for myself at the beginning. It allowed me to just spend half an hour and do some computer work. And then I had to rest for the rest of the day. But the gift it gave me was being able to have a little bit more consistency. So I'd say that's what you're looking out for, like these smaller steps of improvement, rather than, imagining that you're going to fully recover and it's going to be this something
Yeah,
that happens
I
overnight.
hear what you're saying, and let me give you a scenario that would happen to me, because so what advice have you got for the people who would be like me, who the minute you see a small improvement, you go terrific, and you go like a bull at a gate and you nearly kill yourself?
I know that is actually me as well, to be honest. Yeah, bull at a gate, absolutely. look, it's you soon learn though, right? Like we have an inbuilt, I call myself a human barometer because I have what we call post-exertional malaise, PEM, and I don't get it as much anymore. But PEM gives you not, and it, the hard thing about PEM is it can not necessarily be instant feedback. It might be you get the feedback a few days later, but I definitely get feedback when I've gone too hard. And the most recent example was we had a cyclone heading towards Brisbane recently. And honestly, it was exhausting physically. My partner and I were away and we had to hurry home because we had a house sitter who couldn't do what we needed to do. And it was meant to be tracking over our city at that time. But it was all the angst and all the problems that went around that really it just wore me down. And I think I engaged a little bit too much. And then I had an absolute crash. So we still live with that. And it was a really good lesson of not just the physical exertion, but just like not engaging in the emotional. Trying to keep myself in a bit more of a steady state, but then understanding, being a very gentle on myself when I do fall down into these traps. It's one of the hardest things is management of self. But
Yep.
part of the new normal that I have now is, I still have these I guess guardrails around life. So I know that I can only work in the mornings. I have consistency of energy in the mornings. I know that I'm able to do a yoga class each week, and I schedule that in first, but I don't put anything else on that day. And I know that, I need to rest for the rest of the day. Social occasions, some are absolute. Yes, I can attend, and some are a maybe, depending on energy. There are all these little guardrails that I've learned to put in and around. And that's part of what my new normal is. There's these new rules of living that come with a little bit of a buffer, a lot of, I guess, grace for when I do break my own rules, and an investment of my energy and my time and my energy in things that matter most. They get put in the diary first, knowing that I won't be able to do everything.
So effectively, you're adapting your new normal life around the limitations of your condition, and you're trying to put a bit of a fence around it. You're controlling that so that, because I suspect if you've got ME/CFS, you feel that you've got no control. And being able to adapt your life around your physical limitations, at least it's you who are doing the adapting. Therefore, you've got some degree of control, not a whole lot, but I would think that that would give me a little bit of sense of security and maybe satisfaction. That makes me feel better.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a great way to put it. And it's like, yeah, you are adapting, and it's that sense of control. You're right, it's so important. Like, it's, at the beginning I had absolutely no insight into what my day would hold, because I knew that my energy was just going to be at the whim of what it was going to be that day. And that was, I guess, the gift that came with waking up feeling refreshed, knowing that I had a window of time that I really jealously guard, going, I'm able to, like, I'm probably most days, and there's still the odd days where it doesn't work out, but there's maybe two, like at least two good hours in the morning. And so I started learning this art of chipping away at small projects. I refocused and became a executive coach. Coaching, I can just, like, it's only 1 hour duration, so it's something that I know I can handle. It's how I wrote the book, it's how I did all these other things. So it's investing in myself. And that was a mindset shift, like as big as anything else that I've done, because it's not about anyone else. It's not, I give myself those few hours to do the projects, to do the work, to do the things. It might just be just reading a book is what I do with my time, but it's my time. And I don't feel guilty about that, but it did take a little bit of time, I guess, for me to feel good about that.
Yeah.
And
So,
then
any
anything else?
closing comments regarding this new normal? Because I think that some closing comments around that would be a really good lead into the next chapter that we will go through. So, what would you like to leave our listeners with today?
Okay. Well, I guess, look, you can be developing this sense of new normal at any stage of where you're at, even if you're still there in your messy middle years on, year in. But I guess a good question to ask yourself might be, what do I need to find this sense of peace and acceptance with my own reality? It's like, what is within your control? As you would say, Anne,
Yep.
like, what is it that you need? What is it that you can, I guess, embrace? Like, it's, we have this sense, especially women, of like, it can be selfish to focus on yourself. But, my new normal is I focus on what I can do first, and then, I'm able to be of service to others second, but I had to focus on myself first. So, what is it you need in order to find this peace and acceptance with your reality? I guess I'm just giving you permission here to think about, what is it that you need? How can you harness whatever energy, whatever's available to you now to be able to live the life that you want to live?
Beautiful. I think that's a really lovely place to end, Sarah, for this chapter. I find it absolutely inspirational talking to you about these things, about your experiences, and about your insights. And I love the way you have, through your book, framed your experiences into really tangible bites that you're able and willing to share with our audience. So it's been lovely speaking with you again today, Sarah, and I really look forward to our next chapter, which will be, do you want to tell us what our next chapter will be?
Well, the next topic, we've got five topics that we've chosen together that we think would be of most use for this audience. So the next one that we're looking to cover would be around, so understanding this marathon journey now and the different stages we're at. What are some of the, I guess, new energy rules that brings? And the topics around that would be this sense of post-exertional malaise. How that might play out for you at each of like the on the peaks and the troughs that you go through. And then the best strategy that we know that works for people who are going through ME/CFS and long COVID, long-term fatigue conditions, is pacing. So what is pacing and how does pacing work in reality and what are some of the strategies that you might use around that?
Wonderful. As you've been talking, I've just been writing down some things that you've been saying. And what I loved was one of your final comments. What is it that you need to find this peace? An acceptance of your reality, and how can you harness whatever energy is available for you now to live your best life? Sarah Visor, thank you so much for speaking to me again, and I can't wait to speak to you about this next chapter that we're going to discuss on our next podcast. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Anne.
For those listening, you can find Sarah and all the details of her book at www.sarahvisor.com/too-tired-to-think. It's a great book. It's not a book that you just pick up and read through from cover to cover. You can stop at a particular section and say, right, I need to understand this, and so I'm going to really work through one section, and then you can go back and read the rest. So I thoroughly recommend this book to anybody who is interested and wants to learn more. Sarah's book can also be purchased directly from Amazon online, and you can get the links, I think, from the Emerge Australia website. As always, today's podcast is part of an Emerge Australia series that records interviews with patients and people of influence to ensure that the voices of those with ME/CFS are seen and heard. This is a platform where we can together explore the pressing issues faced by over 250,000 people with ME/CFS and at least 400,000 more with long COVID and other energy-limiting conditions. Tune in again for our next interview, and don't forget that for more information and to subscribe to the Emerge Australia newsletter, where we do provide you with a whole lot of additional information about what's happening now in the ME/CFS world and what Emerge Australia is doing, visit our website on www.emerge.org.au.
You may say that I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. hope someday you'll join us and the world.